shine, sleepyhead.
I'm not letting you go to work today.
Wait, what?
Everybody, listen up.
Welcome to The Drive.
Morning, morning, morning.
You're going to talk.
Get on the phone at 339-1140.
Awesome, huh?
Jump in on our text line at 44-1140.
Everyone is talking about it. You must know that.
The Drive starts now.
Welcome back into The Drive. Kyle Madsen and Matt George filling in for Carmichael Dave. Dave took a trip up to Chico yesterday to drop off supplies for those in need, people who have lost everything in the campfire up there in Northern California in Paradise and Butte County. Sounds like Dave is going to be doing another supply run up there tomorrow. So since he's talked about this on Twitter, I'm going to say go ahead and here we go. So Carmichael Dave is going, this is via the KHTK Twitter account. Dave's going back up to Chico. He's going to drop off more donations tomorrow, obviously to provide relief for those impacted by the camp fire. So KHTK here at 280 Commerce Circle in Sacramento. That's the address. We're taking brand new clothing, gift cards, hygiene supplies, so baby wipes, hand sanitizers, baby supplies, of course, formula or diapers, toys, etc. We're open 8:30 to 5:30. And Dave and I'm sure a host of others will help take those supplies up north to Butte County. So again, that's 280 Commerce Circle. Swing by the station. And again, please drop off clothes, gift cards, hygiene supplies, toys, because you have kids too young to really understand what's going on. They just know they've kind of lost everything that I'm sure around this holiday season would certainly appreciate. Something to do, like a new toy or something like that. Anything you can do to help. It's the Do One Thing Challenge is what they're calling it. And we certainly appreciate any donations that you can or want to make. If you can't come by the station, you can actually log on to khtk.com, click on the Salvation Army logo at khtk.com to help those affected by the campfire. You'll see a list of items there and ways to donate. Also, at the Studio Movie Grill on Monday, they're offering 10% of all proceeds from all ticket and food purchases to American Red Cross wildfire relief efforts. So please make sure to help out however you can. We certainly do appreciate it. I want to talk about this Kevin Durant, Draymond Green beef, because we've gotten more details about what happened Monday night. If you missed it, the Warriors and the Clippers are tied at 116. Patrick Beverley misses a shot with 5.5 seconds left. Draymond Green races to the rebound, runs up the floor, turns the ball over. Regulation ends in a tie. Kings lose in overtime. Kevin Durant, as Draymond Green was running the ball up the floor, is furiously clapping for the ball in the backcourt and yelling for the basketball. Green didn't give it up. They got into a shouting match on the sideline that apparently spilled over into the locker room. Next thing we know, Draymond Green is suspended for the team's game against the Hawks the following night. So here's what happened, according to Marcus Thompson of The Athletic. MT is extremely plugged in with the Warriors. Draymond Green, after Kevin Durant yelled at him for not passing him the ball, this is from theathletic.com via Marcus Thompson. Green took exception to how Durant addressed him. The exact dialogue couldn't be recounted, but it began with Green immediately firing back, "Who the F you talking to?" which is kind of normal, I think. But Draymond took exception to the fact that Kevin Durant was treating him like an end-of-the-bench guy, when Draymond Green has been the centerpiece of one of the centerpieces of a Warriors team that won a title and then 73 games in a regular season without Kevin Durant. And they were up 3-1 in a finals that, of course, they lost, but they were up 3-1 in a finals without Kevin Durant. And Draymond Green took exception to Durant talking to him as if he was a scrub. So this is, again, according to Marcus Thompson. Green then went on to make it clear he's been making plays for years. He reminded Durant the Warriors were winning before he showed up, so he wouldn't stand for Durant talking to him as if he were a scrub. Green accused, this is the money line here. Green accused Durant of making the whole season about him, even though he was going to leave after this season. Green let out his frustrations about how Durant has handled free agency, keeping his options open and keeping the story alive, consuming the Warriors and their season with talk of what Durant will do next. That's the edited version. The real version included a bunch of iterations of the B word thrown in Kevin Durant's direction. And I understand Green's frustration. I also understand that Kevin Durant is there to make plays when Stephen Curry is out and while he's in. And that I'm sure the Warriors would rather have Kevin Durant launching a 35-footer in that situation than Draymond Green dribbling into four defenders trying to make a play. But you understand where both guys are coming from, at least I do. But this seems like just another chink in the armor. It looks like, it sounds like this has been a brewing issue for a while with Kevin Durant and his plans to leave. His brother's been posting a bunch of cryptic stuff on social media about we're out of here, we're getting this three-peat and getting out of here and stuff like that. So it sounds like it's at least decently well known in the Warriors locker room that Durant was out after this season, and that's frustrating Draymond Green. And I'm sure he was also frustrated with the loss and frustrated that the loss was going to be blamed partly on him for not giving Kevin Durant the basketball. So this is going to be interesting because this isn't blowing over. They may make up and high-five on the court and be chummy in press conferences and stuff. But I think this is something that underscores a much bigger issue in Golden State and a much bigger fracture in the relationship between Kevin Durant, the Warriors fans. It's always been a little bit of a strange dynamic, and it looks like it's really coming to the fore. And it would not, I think it would surprise me more at this point if Kevin Durant was in Golden State next year than if he wasn't. That's my thoughts on that. We can get back into that later if you guys want. The Timberwolves won their first game without Jimmy Butler as well. The 76ers lost their first game with him. And then the Lakers appear to be rolling now, which is gross. Also, the Mavs beat the Jazz by 50. The Jazz only scored 68 points, which is pretty wild. But we'll talk more about that in the 7:30 segment. We got Sam Amick coming up at 8 o'clock. We'll run a lot of that by him as well. When we get back, four down territory, we're going to take a look ahead to the NFL playoffs as the NFL playoff picture starts to materialize. Who's in, who's out, and then we'll take a quick peek at the Packers and Seahawks game tonight, which you'll be able to listen to right here on Sports 1140. This is Drive. Kyle Madsen and Matt George filling in for Carmichael Dave. Sports 1140 KHGK.
It's time for four down territory on the Drive. First down.
Hey, it's four down territory brought to you by Fire Wings. I want to remind you, they have 21 delicious flavors to choose from. If you haven't tried all 21, trust me, you're missing out. Find the location nearest you at firewings.com. Fire Wings, just wing it. First down.
What current playoff team misses the playoffs, Kyle?
That's a really great question.
Thanks, I wrote it.
Let me get my playoff standings up here. I think the Bengals is the obvious answer because the Bengals, they're sitting at 5-4. They're holding on to the sixth seed. They're not winning their division in the AFC North. And after the shellacking that the Saints put on them and the fact they've given up 500 yards of offense in three consecutive games and were just a handful of yards shy of doing so in four consecutive games because the Steelers got into the 490s, I don't trust the Bengals. Even in a year where defense doesn't seem to matter, their offense is not great. AJ Green is banged up. And you look at the Titans, you look at the Ravens, even the Colts are looking better. I trust all those teams to push for that number six seed more than I trust the Bengals to do so.
I got my eyes locked on the NFC East for this one. The Redskins, even though they are 6-3, and they're the only team in that division over 500, a little concerned about them. Just really, actually, it's honestly the doubt in Alex Smith that's really roaring its ugly head. Also, I don't think the Cowboys are doing anything. I just think they're a bad team in general. But the Philadelphia Eagles at 4-5 surprised me. They are a team that I think will make some noise and at least put some pressure on the Redskins. And we've seen when there's pressure on Alex Smith in the past, it tends to not end up so well for his team.
Yeah, what do they have? Three starting offensive linemen out. They're two starting guards, I believe it is, are definitely out, and that's just brutal. I'm right there with you on Washington as well. I don't think they're as good as their 6-3 record, and I think it'll be reflected in their final record at the end of the season.
Second down. So what current non-playoff team makes it then?
Well, when you're looking at the NFC East specifically, I like the Eagles to win that division more than I like the Cowboys to do so. So I guess I got to go with the Eagles there. In the AFC, I like how the Titans are playing. You can read all about the Titans at TitansWire.com, actually. Ding. But I like the Titans have seemed to have figured something out on offense. They had scored over 20 points only once all year before their bye, and it was in overtime against the Eagles. But after the bye, they've scored 28 points against the Cowboys. They hung up 34 last week while blowing out the Patriots at home. They have a huge game coming up against the Colts this weekend. But I like the Titans to sneak into the playoffs because I think they're figuring things out at the right time. And yeah, their defense is outstanding.
Yeah, I already gave my answer away, but it's going to be the Eagles in the NFC East. Playoff, maybe I put just too much into the fact that they are defending Super Bowl champions, but they still, even in their four wins, they didn't look as sharp as they could. I still think this team has a lot more to offer and are probably, or I'm hoping, for the sake of being right, that this team makes a lot more noise in the second half of the season. Third down.
Yep, third down.
Third down.
Here we go. Is tonight Packers versus Seahawks, this Thursday night football game, is it a win or go home scenario for both these teams?
Hey, shout out to you because the way I wrote that question did not make sense. I think it is, though. You've got the Packers sitting at 4-4-1. They're currently the 7th seed, and you get Seattle at 4-5. And, oh, I guess 4-5, but yeah, the Seattle moving to 5-5. They're still right back in it, while the Packers at 4-5-1 fall further back. And then I like the way the Falcons are playing despite their poor performance against the Browns last weekend. Dallas and Philly, who we just mentioned, are going to work their way up. One of those two teams seems to be able to work their way up into the playoff picture at some point. So, yeah, I think so. I think whoever loses tonight's game is going to be toast.
It certainly feels that way. I'm a lot more confident in the Packers than I am in the Seattle Seahawks. So if there was a team to lose that I think could still try and make some noise, I guess I'd put it on Green Bay. If the Seahawks lose this game, they're done. I mean, I think that's pretty safe to say and safe to assume.
Yeah, they'd be 4-6.
But I expect a Packers win here tonight, and I expect them to be able to keep making some noise and try and sneak their way in to the playoffs.
Perfect lead into fourth down.
Fourth down. Fourth down.
Maybe I should read the questions before I give my answers. Packers, Seahawks tonight. Who you got?
I have the Seahawks at home. The Seahawks should have beat the Chargers. They dropped a touchdown late, or they should have at least tied the Chargers. They dropped a touchdown late, and then they only lost to the Rams 36-31 last week in L.A., and Russell Wilson had a chance to convert a fourth down late that would have extended their drive and put them in Rams territory with a chance to take the lead late in that game, but he overthrew his receiver, and Seattle took the loss. So even though they're sitting at 4-5, they've lost a couple games in a row. I think they're the more talented team all around that defense. It's not the Legion of Boom, but it's still good. And the Packers are banged up, and I don't quite trust their defense yet. I think Seattle will be able to score enough points and force Aaron Rodgers into a couple of mistakes and come away with a win.
Give me the cheese. Go Pack, go. That's all I got to say. Aaron Rodgers is a better quarterback than Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson's also constantly running for his life there in Seattle, which until they get an offensive line to help him out, I mean, he's capable of making some plays, so it's a marvel that they are at the position that they're at to even being in this kind of meaningful game. But the Packers tend to step up in big moments, and they recognize the importance of a game like tonight. So give me the Packers.
Yeah, if anybody is going to make a huge impact for that Packers defense, watch Kenny Clark and Mike Daniels. They're two interior defensive linemen. Both those guys are outstanding. And like you said, Matt, they could really eat against that Seahawks offensive line. But Russell Wilson against pressure up the middle usually does a pretty good job of escaping that, and there's really nobody better improvising than Russell Wilson. So, like I said, I think the Seahawks will be able to put up just enough points to sneak past the Packers. That is four down territory. When we come back, I want to get back into this Kevin Durant thing a little bit, because there are some big-time implications on that. And then we can get into the Kings, too, something Matt alluded to earlier. What's success this season? Like we need to officially change the barometer for this season, and what is success and what is failure for the Kings. We'll dive into that, and then we can take a look around the rest of the NBA scoreboard as well, because some interesting things happened last night with Jimmy Butler making his debut for the 76ers, the Timberwolves winning in their first game without him, and then LeBron James passing Wilt Chamberlain on the all-time scoring list. All of that, an NBA roundup coming up next on The Drive. It's Sports 1140 KHTK.
It's The Drive on Sports 1140 KHTK.
Kyle Madsen, Matt George, back here on The Drive on Sports 1140. Thank you for riding along with us today. It's 7:30 on Thursday, November 15th. And our drive question of the day: what's your belief point for the Kings? At what point are you saying, hey, this is a playoff team? This is the year they jump into the eighth seed. Want to touch on this probably once a segment here, the Do One Thing Challenge that Sports 1140 is putting on with Carmichael Dave. Dave is going to go back up to Chico tomorrow to drop off donations to help those impacted by the camp fire. So we're taking, here at the station, 280 Commerce Circle in Sacramento, we're taking brand new clothing, gift cards, specifically Walmart. Walmart is the closest store that just kind of has everything. So Walmart gift cards, hygiene supplies, so you know your baby wipes and your hand sanitizers, baby supplies too, formula and diapers and stuff, toys, etc. You can donate those today between 8:30 and 5:30 p.m. Again, that's 280 Commerce Circle. Come by the station, and we're accepting donations, and Dave, and I'm sure he'll have some help. We'll take those up to Chico tomorrow. Dave is out today. He's a little bit under the weather. He let us know very late last night that he was going to be out. That's how you know it's real. So we certainly, normally we'd give Dave a hard time for not being here, but given what he was up to yesterday, I find it hard to harass him, even in jest, for being out sick. Space Jam came out 22 years ago today. This is a thing I just learned. A, that makes me feel old, because I remember going and seeing Space Jam in the theater. One of the first movies I think I ever saw in theaters. I was 6 years old when that movie came out. Matt, how old were you? You were like two.
What year did it come out?
96.
96? I was two.
And I'm surprised it's taken this long. Like, there's rumors that Space Jam 2 is in the works with LeBron. I'm surprised it's taken this long for Space Jam 2 to happen, if it is indeed happening.
You are?
Yeah, man.
Really? Looney Tunes is pretty much dead.
No, but the nostalgia hit of it, like, we've got a live Pokemon movie coming out with Ryan Reynolds as the voice of Pikachu.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't get a Space Jam remake in here. Like, I know the Looney Tunes popularity isn't what it was,
which is stupid.
But you could, a Space Jam remake would be a hit. Like oh, yeah. I said, for no other reason than nostalgia factor.
And it'll be successful. It'll probably also piss off a lot of people like you and I who are kids of Space Jam 1.
I suppose. I think if it's a different movie and not a exact remake, I'd be fine with it.
Well,
I'd also be fascinated to see if they do a Monstars thing again, who they would pick for that.
Oh, they would definitely get the stars of today, which would be fantastic. No, and I'd watch it, and I'd absolutely be into it, and I'd enjoy it. And I think they should do it, and it'll instantly be a moneymaker, and which is why I believe they will be doing it. As far as the rumors are concerned, I think it's been pretty much confirmed that LeBron is going to be doing it, which if they want to make that movie accurate, what they need to do is have him play with all the Looney Tunes and stuff like that, and then every time a Monstar fouls LeBron, you have to stop the movie for about 30 seconds to watch him cry, and then J.R. Smith somehow has
You're
to
really
make his
salty
way in
about
there.
This.
So I told you this off the air. I watched the LeBron James Laker game last night, and LeBron was fantastic, and I watched it. And don't get me wrong, I enjoy watching LeBron because, yes, he's the greatest basketball player, maybe of all time, certainly the greatest basketball player today. And I will one day be able to tell my kids, I got to watch LeBron James in person, and it was magical, and he's just as good as you say he is. But every time I watch a LeBron James game, Kyle, I end up just pissed off and exhausted because all he does is complain constantly. And it's just a theme with the NBA today, and I get it. Like I just sound like an old man barking from a lawn.
You do.
But I just get so freaking frustrated with it. But anyway, back to Space Jam. I would be super, super into it. I love that movie. It's one of my favorite movies of all time, and there's never not a good time to watch Space Jam. If you find it on TV, you have to watch it.
I mean, maybe this is a generational thing, but one of my least favorite people is a guy who nitpicks Space Jam, which is a movie about Michael Jordan getting pulled down into
it's
Looney
a cartoon
Tunes
for
land,
children.
Right. Through a golf hole. and there's people who are like, actually, the scoring doesn't add up. He traveled on this play.
There's no way Michael Jordan's arm could be that long.
Yeah. It's just like, dude, nitpicking Space Jam guy is one of the worst guys. Don't be that guy, Matt. If Space Jam 2 happens, don't be nitpicking.
Oh, God,
Jam
no.
2.
No, I'm going to watch it. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm just saying there are going to be people out there that are going to complain about it because they just need something new to complain about, and Star Wars isn't out yet.
That's fair. The Utah Jazz last night fell to 7-7. They lost by 50 mm-hmm. to the Mavericks. 118-68. The Utah Jazz.
Sorry, the 5-3-0 just got me. I heard Space Jam 2 will star Ryan Reynolds playing the part of LeBron James. I'm in. I'm all the way in.
Good.
Sorry, Utah Jazz.
That's really good. The Jazz last night, they scored 24 in the first quarter, 22 in the second. All right? That's a respectable 46-point first half. You figure, okay, they shoot a little better in the second half. They get over 100. They were down 46-58 at the half. It's the Jazz against the Mavs. You figure the Jazz are still in it. The Jazz scored 13 points in the third and 9 points in the fourth quarter. They scored 22 points and a half in a version of the NBA where teams score 22 points in 5 minutes.
Yay.
They scored 22 and a half.
Didn't the Rockets do that not too long ago, too?
I'm not sure. But they scored 68 for the entire game. Donovan Mitchell had 10. Ricky Rubio led the way for the Jazz with 11 points. All of this is to wonder if the Jazz are good.
Yes, they are.
Are you sure?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
They've got so much talent on that team. I think they're just in a rut right now, but I think they'll be just fine. But they're not as good as people expected them to be because it's hard to follow up on the year that they had last year. And a lot of that has to do with Donovan Mitchell. And I think it's totally fair for Donovan Mitchell to struggle. He had a phenomenal rookie campaign, and he really made a name for himself when Rudy Gobert was hurt. You want Donovan Mitchell to add and build upon the year that he had last year? You know how difficult that is? Rudy Gobert is still just as good of a defensive player, but we're starting to see some of the concerns of the fact that, oh, wait, he can't really shoot and score. So there's things that they have to work around that. And then you look at the other parts of their roster. I mean, Ricky Rubio is a good point guard, good at defense, good at passing, can't shoot. You look at Joe Ingles, who's a great shooter, but, I mean, there's the athletic concerns on the defensive end of the floor. I love Jay Crowder, but he's fallen off over the last couple of seasons, at least offensively. Defensively, he's still very good. This team is a good team, and they will be successful, but they still are miles away from even competing with a team like Golden State. Why? Because of the pieces that they have. They can't just lean on Donovan Mitchell to be an MVP-type player like he was last year.
Yeah, and he's effectively having the same year. He's not shooting as well from three, but he's statistically almost the exact same across the board.
And they call it a sophomore slump for a reason. You come into the league, nobody knows how to deal with you. You explode onto the scene. Look at Tyreek Evans, his 25-5 year. His next year back, he struggled tremendously. Now, I'm not comparing Donovan Mitchell to Tyreek Evans because I think Donovan Mitchell is a much better player. But Tyreek Evans, all you had to do was don't step out on him and force him to leave his feet when he drove. And then his career went from, oh my God, this guy could be amazing, to, okay, he's a perennial role player. Right. I mean, I'm not saying that's going to be what Donovan Mitchell does, but teams know how to adjust and play Donovan Mitchell now. And you're seeing him struggle to get still good numbers.
Yeah, and Dante Exum is another guy. He started the year very well. He scored 13 in consecutive games. He scored in double figures in four of the Jazz first seven games, but he hasn't gotten there since Halloween.
My man needs help too. I mean, it's just him. He needs he needs someone to help take some of the pressure off him.
Donovan Mitchell or Dante Exum?
Donovan Mitchell, I'm sorry. I thought you were still talking about him.
No.
Yeah, Dante Exum is a nice piece too. I mean, they've got good pieces there, but the problem is, and yes, Donovan Mitchell is your go-to star, but you look at how the NBA is today with 2-3 stars, teams like the Golden State Warriors, if there's 30 seconds left or 10 seconds left and you need a shot, you know it's going to Donovan Mitchell. How about you get someone else in there that can potentially stand in the corner or help him out if he gets double teamed or
triple-teamed? You're not kicking it to Joe Ingles for the win?
Jingles!
Yeah, and Quinn Snyder's there, obviously. Quinn Snyder's a dynamite head coach. Yeah, I think the Jazz will figure it out. Here's the way I'm looking at this. When we look at the Kings and 8-6 in this start,
right,
and we go, man, the Kings are good. The Kings are good again. Look at this. And we wonder, at what point do we start believing in the Kings? At what point do we start kind of hashing out some of these teams where we go, New Orleans is just 7-7. Like, maybe New Orleans was winning 40 or 41 games this year when we thought they were going to win 50.
Yeah.
So that's just where that comes from. Is
I was low on New Orleans from the start. I think San Antonio, who's currently out of the playoff picture, and they lost to the Suns last night, they'll figure it out. They'll be just fine with the talent that they have, and Greg Popovich is their head coach. This what they're doing, and they're struggling right now. That's kind of an anomaly. The Jazz, I expect to figure things out. The Pelicans, I wasn't too high on, because at some point, Mirotic and that team was going to stop shooting 85% from three-point range. I mean, what they did to the Houston Rockets on opening night was fantastic, and then the very next night, or the next game, rather, they take on the Kings and are not missing once again. Like, you can't sustain that through a full season. All they have there is Anthony Davis, and they know it. Julius Randle's a nice pickup as well. But there are teams that are clearly on the hype train. And to be honest with you, the Kings are one of them. There is going to be some point where they hit a wall this season. It's how they battle through it that we still haven't seen yet.
There are 14 teams, obviously, in the West. Sorry, 15.
Do we count the Suns as a team?
11, 12, it's 13, 15. 14, 15. Jeez Louise, Kyle. Figure it out.
Well, I mean, you could give or take one or two in the East and one in the West.
But there are 14 teams that could conceivably make the playoffs. Like, the teams that aren't in the postseason right now, the Spurs, Jazz, Pelicans, Rockets, Mavericks, Timberwolves.
Suns.
And then there's the Suns.
Sorry.
No, the Suns are sitting there at 3 wins. The Timberwolves at 6-9 are the 14 seed right now in the West. They would be tied for the 10 seed in the East.
Yep.
Like, there are just, the whole thing here is outside of the Suns, are there any legitimately just, like, bad teams in the West?
I don't think the Dallas Mavericks are very good, and that's not just an anti-Luka take, people. That is, DeAndre Jordan is not
Matt,
as good as people.
Why do you hate Luka Doncic?
Because he's not Marvin Beck. No, I actually really enjoy watching Luka Doncic, but
he's outstanding.
You know who I don't like is DeAndre Jordan. I've always thought DeAndre Jordan was one of the most overrated and overhyped players on the planet that cashed in.
I'm so with you.
He cashed in on the fact that he played alongside Chris Paul. DeAndre Jordan would never have been a member of a quote-unquote big three on any other team except for catching lobs and getting rebounds. He's Tyson Chandler at his best. He's what Tyson Chandler was for the Mavericks, which is pretty damn good. Don't get me wrong. I just praised Chandler earlier on in the show. But DeAndre Jordan is not nearly as good as people think that he is and have touted him to be. And the latest to cash in on Chris Paul right now is Clint Capella, who is also having a down year. Surprise, surprise. But DeAndre Jordan is not a good fit in Dallas. He's also an airhead and apparently has rubbed teammates the wrong way.
Yeah, that's the report.
That is Luka Doncic's team. Harrison Barnes, I know, is a good player. I was never too high on him. Dennis Smith Jr. is down, and anybody that thinks that Dennis Smith Jr. was a better pick or better guard in that draft than De'Aaron Fox is laughable.
I mean, that's actually, I was going to bring this up yesterday, but I brought up maybe three quarters of the way through last year. The Kings, if they hadn't traded back in the draft a couple years ago,
yeah,
they could have drafted Donovan Mitchell 5 and then Dennis Smith Jr. at 10. And I asked, would you rather have those two guys or De'Aaron Fox? And at the time,
they'd say those two
guys. It was a no-brainer, those two
guys. Yeah, absolutely. Just for, screw Dennis Smith Jr., it's for Mitchell.
Right.
They could have had Fox and Mitchell.
But now, like, when you look at it, that question becomes much more interesting.
Oh, as of right now, I'd take Fox. I like Mitchell. I really like Mitchell.
Right. You're basically, it's are you trading Donovan Mitchell for De'Aaron Fox straight across?
And then Dennis Smith Jr. is a cherry.
Right.
Yeah, I'd probably.
It's just, I think, I don't want to get into it.
Yeah, I got you.
The fact is, it is a much more relevant discussion or much more, it's a much easier discussion to have now.
Yeah.
As an actual debate versus last year.
Right.
I just remember when I brought that up, everyone's like, well, let's wait and see. And sure enough, here we are. De'Aaron Fox is really freaking good.
Are we able to say now that De'Aaron Fox, out of all the guards in the top 10, De'Aaron Fox is the best one? I mean, Lonzo Ball puts up great numbers, but he hasn't gotten better. He's gotten worse, especially from, I mean, De'Aaron Fox has added to his weakness, which was his outside shot. Lonzo Ball is terrible from three-point range. And then you have Dennis Smith Jr., who is not a bad player, very athletic, still has that Russell Westbrook type ability, but he's fallen off a little bit. And I get it's a low sample size, but
he's a Russell Westbrook bounce for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know if he's like that of a player, but yeah,
I meant type of player, not as good, sure, not nearly as good. But De'Aaron is, and I mean, he's from the start of last season all the way through has continued to improve. He's shooting lights out from 3-point range right now. He was clutch last season, helped the Kings to win a couple games and send a couple games to overtime. I think it's safe to say De'Aaron Fox, and numbers wise, the numbers support it. I think De'Aaron Fox is the best point guard in that top 10 and in that draft.
I think if you look in the entire, he's the best point guard for sure.
Not the best player.
I don't think, but he's close though. Oh. And I think it's closer. No, because Fultz and Ball are out. Jason Tatum is okay. I'll accept the argument that Jason Tatum is ahead of De'Aaron Fox right now.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Jackson, no.
Huh.
Jonathan Isaac, no. Lauri Markkanen, no.
Yeah.
Frank.
Yeah, I can't pronounce the
other. Ntilikina?
Yeah, Frank. Just Frank.
Frankie Smokes, no. Dennis Smith Jr., no. Zach Collins, Malik Monk, Luke Kennard, and then Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell, I think, is the only other guy in the first round who I'm putting up there with De'Aaron.
No,
Fox.
It's Mitchell and Tatum tier A, and then Fox tier B plus. Like that's what it is right now. Because Fox,
can we go Fox tier A minus?
I still think Fox has more to prove because Fox has not yet established himself for the Kings. Yes, but in the NBA, he's not established himself as a perennial star. And both Tatum and Mitchell have both done that just because of their playoff performances alone.
Okay, that's fair. I think De'Aaron Fox is going to be one of those guys that when he gets into the playoffs is going to be a monster.
Absolutely.
There's some middle finger to his game that's like, I'm going to be the best player on the court right now.
Yep.
And there's nothing you can do to stop it.
He showed that against the Lakers right at the end of the first half. The Kings weren't scoring at all. And he said, you know what? Fine. I'm going to pull up for three contested three-pointers. And he drained all three of them. Yeah. Like, he's like, screw it. Fine. No one else is going to do anything. I'm going to do it.
Yeah. There's this edge to his... And I'm such a like numbers oriented person typically, sure, where I'm like, we have to be able to quantify this.
Sure.
And I have nothing to quantify this, but De'Aaron Fox
just has that edge, that like that it.
You know what we ought
factor.
To have? We ought
God,
to have
I hate,
a,
that.
A,
I hate
a,
that I just said that.
We ought to have a segment or like a section in statistics on like Basketball Reference or NBA.com that's PON, pissed off numbers. Like when a player is pissed off or like is either coming off of a technical or at some point in the game, you can just tell they're pissed off how their numbers increase or decrease. Because some players just have that edge. DeMarcus Cousins is a perfect example. They have that edge to where you get under their skin and there's nothing. Even, you know who tries to do that but doesn't do it very well, and I love him here in Sacramento, is Nemanja Bjelica. If Bjelica gets beat on one end of the floor, he immediately comes back and tries to beat you. He tried to do it against Kuzma three times, and he got embarrassed, quite honestly. But players like that are like, you know what? No. Uh-uh. You got me here. I'm going to get you.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
those numbers would be really fun to see.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Hey, Kevin Hogan checking in on Twitter. He said that he heard us announcing the need for gift cards to help people who need relief from the campfire. He said Target, Big Lots, Old Navy, Round Table, Starbucks, and Chipotle are all in that area, as well as Walmart. So you can get those gift cards. Drop them off here at 280 Commerce Circle.
That's a good shopping center.
And Carmichael Dave. And some other people will be driving supplies and gift cards and your donations up to Chico tomorrow. We're open 8:30 to 5:30 at 280 Commerce Circle. So we do appreciate your donations all day. We also appreciate your donations of fresh or frozen turkeys to the Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services. Help make sure thousands of families in need are able to enjoy a holiday meal this Thanksgiving. The 1140 Street team will be helping collect donations from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. at 3333 3rd Avenue in Sacramento. Details at khtk.com. Get into the giving season, as there are people both affected by the campfire and then people not necessarily affected by the fires who could use your help this holiday season. So we do appreciate any help that you can give.
The holidays are here, man. God, I'm not ready.
No,
I'm not ready.
I was always told as a kid that I would complain to my mom when I was like 9 or 10. I'd be like, I feel like this day went by so fast. And my mom or whoever would always be like, just wait till you get older.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that's stupid.
Like, happy May, it's Christmas.
Yeah. That's just wild. Like, I feel like the MLB season, like, I would feel like we're just at spring training. And now it's almost a holiday.
Oh, boy, I don't. This summer dragged on.
It's unreal. So, where were we at? De'Aaron Fox being the man come postseason. I know we talk about this all the time, and we got to go in a couple minutes, but the more I see the Kings improve and the buzz that gets generated by even a small amount of success, I get super excited. And this is a Warriors fan talking. Born and raised in the Bay Area, I moved out to Sacramento in 2008 to go to school. I graduated from Sac State.
Yeah.
Spent a few years here in Sacramento. Moved to Arizona for a couple years, came back to Sacramento. And the idea of the Kings making a playoff run and what this area would be like gives me endless amount of joy.
So you asked earlier in the show, going to one of the breaks, if there were different parameters to what you considered to be a successful season at this point.
Yeah.
With both a combination of going into the season, our expectations, and then what we've seen from this team so far in this 8-6 start. And I've limited it down to three. And most of them are the same from opening night. It's over 33 wins, which is the most you got with DeMarcus Cousins. If you do that, you're successful, even if you don't make the playoffs. Number two is De'Aaron Fox looking like your leader and your star. I think it's safe to say we're seeing that. And number three, do you have a play style or an identity that's established? So far, they do with pushing the tempo and running, and teams are starting to respect them for that and fear them for that, really. But can they carry that out through an 82-game season? Is this pace able to be sustainable? Because if they're able to do that all season long, there are going to be teams that are looking at the Kings and going, we need to be able to do that, or young teams like the Kings are going to do that and run us out of the building on a nightly basis.
Well, what I think will happen eventually is as the Kings evolve and add pieces, I think you'll see the necessity to get out and run diminish some. Because right now, I think to be successful, they have to hit that just breakneck pace.
Absolutely.
Because if it gets slowed down...
Yeah, their half-court offense isn't good.
Right. But I think eventually, as these young guys gain experience, and like I said, you add more veterans and they grow together and play together, that need to be the fastest team in the league will go away.
Yeah.
But I think you hit the nail on the head with you start to see De'Aaron Fox emerge as the guy, and he is. The only way I think this season is not a success is if they just face plant and lose like 15 in a row.
Yeah, if they hit a month that it's just doom and gloom month.
Yeah, but if they can avoid, if they lose 3, 4, even like 5 in a row, but then come back with you know 2 or 3 wins and keep themselves afloat, I think that's probably the ideal. Avoiding a long skid, a long losing skid is a big deal.
And there's also an area of legitimate concern, too, with teams that are playing at this breakneck speed and this pace is injury concerns. And De'Aaron Fox is not this year, which has been fantastic. He's been completely healthy. But last year, there were a couple of games where he had some injury bugs that held him back. And honestly, if De'Aaron Fox were to get hurt, now the Kings did a nice job battling through his injury when he wasn't feeling too hot in Orlando. But in all honesty, if De'Aaron Fox were to go down for a week, for 2 weeks,
yeah,
this team's in very big trouble.
Yeah.
Like, and Frank Mason hasn't done a bad job off the bench, but they lean so heavily on what Fox does, even off of the ball.
Sure, and that's just the nature of the NBA today.
Yeah, no, and I mean, every team can say, well, if we get hurt, we're screwed. Like, I get that, but there's legitimate concern with how this team plays, the physicality and the pace that they play at. Is it sustainable? Are players going to start to go down?
I want to let you know that we're giving away Fleetwood Mac tickets. They're at the Golden One Center on November 23rd. That's next Friday. Get more info at khtk.com. All KHTK giveaways are powered by RosevilleAutoMall.com. We'll give those away in the third hour. Coming up next, we're going to talk NBA with Sam Amick of The Athletic. Want to get into the Kevin Durant and Draymond Green thing and see what that means for Kevin Durant's future and really the outlook of the NBA going forward, because I think there are going to be some real long-term ramifications of the dynamic we're seeing here emerge with the Golden State Warriors. Sam Amick of The Athletic is coming up next right here on Sports 1140 KHTK.